Blog Talk Radio.
On September 4th, 2013, I noticed after the last show that I gave the wrong date, but that's the right date. And today, I want to talk to you about leadership. Leadership! I've always wondered what questions are good to ask in an interview when the client is looking for a leader. And you know, the stereotype idea of a leader is someone who seems to be a little more than human. He has to pretend that he doesn't have any doubts at all. He can't ever admit that he's not sure if he's making the right decision. And he doesn't have the right to change his mind. And you know why? Because what people want from a leader is certainty. Certainty, right? But then last week I saw that Steve Jobs, the most celebrated leader of the 21st century, which isn't that old, he was a super duper flip flopper, okay? And who said that? Tim Cook, that's who. He was Steve's number two man. Now he has Steve's old job, and he should know. Tim Cook says that Steve Jobs flip flopped all the time. I saw it daily, says Tim. And Tim, you know, he liked that because he thinks it takes courage to say, I was wrong. And here's an example about Steve's flip-flops that I read in another article. Steve didn't like 7-inch tablets. He said they were too small for your fingers. You really couldn't navigate with them very well. But when he saw that the market proved him wrong, that people wanted them, he was willing to change his point of view. But you know what? I don't consider that a real flip-flop. You flip-flop when you change your mind before the outcome is known, when the outcome is still uncertain. Steve knew that he was wrong. He couldn't deny it. And I've never seen a leader get any mileage out of flip-flopping when they don't know what's going to happen. I'm losing my track, but just I'll finish anyway. John Kerry, he was beaten to death at the election, that presidential election, with the claim that he flip-flopped. And now President Obama is flip-flopping on Syria, and he's taking a big, bad beating too. But if Tim Cook says that's the sign of a leader, and if Steve Jobs had the guts to flip-flop, you know, maybe I'm going to hold it in my mind that there could be something to it. So next time I'm interviewing a manager, I'm going to say, hey, pal, do you know who Tim Cook is? That's the setup. Do you know who Tim Cook is? He runs Apple. And he said that what he learned from Steve Jobs is that it's okay to flip-flop. Apparently Steve Jobs changed his mind from day to day. Tim said Steve would flip on something so fast that you would forget that he was the one taking the opposite position the day before. And Tim Cook says, this is a long setup. I'm setting up the candidate, but it's a long one. Tim Cook said it takes courage to change your mind in public and that it was a gift. So, Mr. Candidate or Miss Candidate, do you agree with that? And if the candidate says, no, I don't agree that flip-flopping is good, I'll ask, well, do you think a manager should pretend that he's certain that he's right, even when he thinks he's wrong? You see, I have that candidate cornered now. And you know what the right answer is to that? The leader should pretend he thinks he's right until he's actually ready to change his mind, just like Steve Jobs did. He didn't say one day, well, maybe, maybe not. He said, this is the way it is. And then when he saw he was wrong, he said, that's not the way it is. Differing is not what people want from a leader. So, you know, Obama said he's going in. Now he's not sure. Now he's taking it to Congress. It doesn't look very good, does it? Anyway, listen, I'm going to end. If you're confused, if you don't really know what you think, why would we even want you to be a guest on Jerry Orchard?
The recruiting animal. Well, how you doing?
You're
today?
Here? I thought you were hey, off today.
Dude, of course I'm here. I just did the shout-out, man.
Okay, yeah, you know what? I asked.
Gosh!
I didn't
dude,
prep enough. I
are no secrets safe with you?
I had a good intro, and I didn't prep enough, and so it didn't come out good. I don't think it did. But
no,
I
faded
point.
In and out. I was
yeah,
just
you
watching the.
In and out. You're always busy eating usually when I'm.
No, nope, not eating.
Doing my
I was busy
intro.
watching a video of the Syrian rebel fighter cut the heart out of
I don't want to see
this
it.
Guy
oh,
that
come
he
on.
Shot.
That's not a recurring topic.
And
no,
hit
no.
it.
No.
And
I'm
hit
blocking
it.
I'm blocking
ew.
That out.
That's,
I'm blocking
that
out.
Is who we're supporting here, I guess.
Okay. Yep,
cannibals?
I'm blocking that out. I'm blocking that out, okay. It was only one guy.
You brought it up, Animal, talking about Obama
why is
it,
why
and all
is
that.
Thing?
You opened the door to the Syria discussion. This is all your
fault.
Oh,
there's fault. Amy. I want everybody
I'm here.
To
only
know
got half hour.
Amy could only stay half the show because she's busy choosing the next CEO for Microsoft, okay?
yeah, exactly.
And she said,
why the heart of that thing? I mean, you should have eaten the liver.
she says they didn't ask her about Nokia, okay? I don't think that was a good move, but
I heard about it when
not,
you guys heard about it.
It's not her fault. You shouldn't admit that, Amy. We want to think you're a somebody.
I don't know if we can trust her, though.
Hey, I count on Miami to give me street cred, not my employer.
Right, Miami. Okay, so today we've got a big famous guest. His name is Jeremy Roberts. He's been a recruiter and a sorcerer. I'm not going to let him introduce himself. I'm going to do that, okay? He's been a recruiter and a sorcerer both in the corporate recruiting department environment and in third-party recruiting agencies. And now he's the editor of the SourceCon blog. Jeremy Roberts, are you here? Jeremy Roberts.
Maybe
you
should
here?
Unmute him.
I'll be Jeremy Roberts.
I hear ya. You're on a good phone, right? You're on a landline, aren't you?
I am.
Okay, could have fooled me.
Wow,
let's
that
go
is
ahead.
Clear. 8 years. You can really hear him.
A landline in a subway, which is very interesting.
Yeah, that's about it. A landline in a subway. That's what it sounds like to me. Jeremy, did you pick a song?
Say what? Did I pick a song?
Song. You know, we sing
you
at the beginning
sing.
Of every show. How come people tell me before the show, oh, yeah, I listen to a lot of your shows, and then when I say, what did you want to sing, they act like they're dumb.
They're liars.
No,
Jeremy, you
what,
there?
Sing that Miley Cyrus song. No, the Robbie Thicke song.
You know it? I don't know it.
And
I don't
we know
that
you
one.
Know that by heart, as well as the tent.
Okay, Jeremy, are you there? Jeremy, are you there? Jeez. I won't
this is what happens when you make people use landlines.
Jeremy, are you there? Mr. Guest.
Do you like me to call on my iPhone?
No, but just say yes. There's a delay that only happens when people call on Skype. You're not
yeah,
on Skype, are you?
Yeah, this guy is not on a straight-up landline.
Fine.
See?
Are you on a landline, Jeremy? Don't ruin the
I
show. It's going downhill now.
I'm on a land.
He's on a landline on speakerphone, then.
I'm on a landline. House with I'm echoing. I need to find like
that?
A carpeted
guy,
room.
Going in and out. Are you on a landline with VoIP or something? I mean, we can't hear you. I mean, how can I run
yes.
a show like that?
As well as you run the other shows.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, VoIP isn't technically a landline, right? You know that?
Yeah.
Skype
right.
and stuff.
Okay. Look, we're going to sing Young American. Do you know that song?
No.
Are you kidding me, you liar?
Hey, you want me to call on my...
Yeah, call on another phone. This is absolutely ridiculous. You know what?
This is going to happen until 9:30 when I have to get off the phone and get on a conference call and then miss my shot.
I'm losing all my listeners. I'm losing everybody. What's wrong with the guests? Why can't they call? There's a delay on that guy's phone. He wants to present himself as a professional, and he can't even call on a phone.
He's being capped.
What?
It's because he's being capped. That's why. GSA is running a tap on him for sourcing.
Okay, let's see if he's back. Are you back, Jeremy?
I'm on a different phone. Is this better?
That
yes. Sounds great.
Yeah, okay.
See, this is an iPhone. I told you all along. I told you all along I use an iPhone for everything, and I've never had a problem.
Okay, enough with the phone.
Oh,
you
think
don't
this is a setup, animal.
What song do you know?
I don't sing at all.
You know, I have to say something. What's wrong with Americans or recruiters that they are so ashamed, you know, that they really have no life in them? There's lots of people in other countries, they say, oh, I moved to the United States and the people there are dead. And I don't agree with that, okay? Go, you know, those other countries are a mess. Is that what lively? Are they lively in Syria? I don't want to be lively like that. But I don't want someone who doesn't have the guts to sing a little song. Come on.
If I could sing, I wouldn't recruit.
Sing the Wiggles.
I would not do what I do for a living if I could sing.
Shame on you. You are gutless. I'll tell you right at the beginning of the show. You're a gutless. I'm not going to sing myself because I don't have time. Unless somebody else wants to sing Young American with me. Any volunteers?
The David Bowie version?
That's the only one.
Or the Celine Dion.
Forget it. Okay. So, Jeremy Roberts, you're an editor of SourceCon, right.com?
Correct.
Okay. Now, I was reading your Twitter column today, your Twitter postings, and you referred people to an article called Three Hiring Takeaways from the Miss America Pageant. Did you actually get anything out of that? Did you get any takeaways from that before you recommended it to me?
You know, I thought it was a good article. It's one of our sister publications, and I tweet a lot of what they post.
Yeah, I know. Okay, that article is pure garbage. Here are the three takeaways. You're looking for a candidate whose unique abilities will add something special to your company. What idiot doesn't know that? Okay, thanks for nothing. Number two, watch out for candidates who use a lot of buzzwords. What does that mean exactly, Jeremy, since you got something out of the article?
Well, a buzzword is doesn't actually give you any depth. So, you know, if they're just dropping buzzwords but they're not able to go any deeper, then that's a problem.
Okay, so that really is don't hire candidates who can't explain anything. Is that right?
Yeah, for all fairness, Animal, I mean, this TLNT is an HR blog, right? So the content there is not going to go to the depth that an ERE, when you look at recruiting,
it's not. This is a moronic article. Don't try to back out of it, and I have a point. Social recruiting, and a recruiter, what should a recruiter put up on his or her Twitter page? Garbage like this or job postings? I say job postings. This is total nonsense.
How is that nonsense versus job postings? Who would read? How many of you have posted a job on Twitter and had much success? And I don't like the social recruiting buzzword either. That's a buzzword monster.
Okay. Social recruiting is a term we're going to use on this show. If you're – I just want to say, if you're a recruiter and you're handling a niche of financial people or something like that, you should be posting 90% financial jobs. That's what they're interested in. They don't want to read crappy little articles like job hunting takeaways from the Miss America show or recruiting takeaways from the Honey Boo Boo show. Okay? That is garbage. That's pure garbage. And you don't have the guts to admit it that you didn't even read it. You just saw the title and you put it up there. Thanks for nothing, okay, for that posting. It was a waste of time.
My audience, I don't recruit in finance right now. My audience is HR and talent acquisition leaders.
Yeah, not one recruiter or HR person who reads that article thinks it's good. Did anybody read it? I posted it on the recruiting blog on Facebook. Anybody read that article?
I did. If you actually look at it, the title, it's a link bait, clickbait. because you think there's going to be a picture of a girl in a bikini. So
that's what I thought.
It's perfect. It's a traffic builder.
Me too. Durbin,
marketing.
You are right.
And so I split. The purpose of this call is you all clicked on it, right?
We all
didn't read it.
My channel.
Yeah, but it left a bad taste in our mouths, okay? At least
yep.
if you would have had a picture of a pretty girl there.
Now.
Okay, we'll move on.
I was
on.
Ripped
okay.
off.
I have to run
okay,
go judge the contest, so I'll be back.
Okay, we're going to go for the Amy Alice stuff. The value. This section is called The Value of Online Sourcing. These days, this is what Jeremy thinks. You have to tell me if you don't really. These days, sourcers are the real headhunters. They're the ones who find people who aren't applying for jobs. Recruiters just follow through on what the sourcers tell them to do, right? Is that what you believe, Jeremy?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that in corporate recruiting, and I'm going to give my background so you understand the context of those statements wherever you got that. Basically, for me, I left third-party recruiting and went into corporate recruiting. Once I was in corporate recruiting for about a year, I realized that in a lot of corporate recruiting departments, the rec loads are so high and the administrative burden is so high due to OFCCP and other regulations that you really become more of an account manager if you're not careful. And you're pushing paper, processing applicants that apply with an ATS. And to me, honestly, I felt like I was losing my edge. I wasn't able to find any – I mean, I wasn't practicing, you know, finding and engaging with talent. So that's when I made the transition to sourcing. So that is the context of that statement. So I'm not saying no recruiters can close. I'm saying a lot of recruiters in the States have oftentimes become more account managers than they are actually proactive recruiting.
Totally agree. Okay.
You totally agree, Amy, and you're a recruiter, so
I wish I recruited in a world where my job was that easy, because even, and I have a fabulous sourcer, Tyra Nelson. You probably noticed on Facebook I offered to pick up her dry cleaning since I'm apparently her admin. Here's the reality. She does the bulk of our hardcore sourcing, you know, going out, searching the bowels of the internet for people that are not applying. I do that about 25% of the time. I'm actually graded on that, so I have to do it as part of my job. But even if we move forward with Tyra's candidates, which is usually what happens, I'm still the one that's doing all the account management, all of the closing, all of the offer negotiating. I am not pushing paper, and I don't get to, just because I work for a large popular company doesn't mean that I can say, oh, hey, here's an offer, just take it. It's not that easy. I work just as hard now closing people on both sides of the process as I ever did.
Well, I think Jeremy's going to take a different point of view on that, because there's a theory that I've seen mentioned a few times that if a deal goes south with a big company like yours, they don't really care. They don't really have the sense of urgency to close a candidate because there's lots of other people applying for the job.
Not my reality.
If you're in a third-party recruiting company, you got to feed your family based on one or two placements a month, and you're not going to take it so lightly. You're going to work a little harder to get the right person in. What do you say, Amy?
I say that's crap. That is crap. That is a myth that any large company, mine or any other large company out there, just gets to, you know, pick and choose all this massive group of people that are just beating down our door. That's not how it works. Maybe we have a higher bar than you guys think. I don't know. But I still have to work just as hard to woo and close candidates as I ever did as a third-party recruiter.
Are you saying that you don't have a talent community?
We'll come to that after.
We'll talk about that later, okay?
I want an answer. Don't you have a talent community?
We have an opt-in for candidates who want to get updates, so they can plug in their email address and they become part of what you may refer to as a talent community.
Okay.
But
and you don't just tell them, hey, come on in, we'll take you now.
Anybody can sign up. Anybody can come and check out our website, our careers page, connect with me, but that doesn't change when we're talking about a specific candidate in a specific position. There's still a lot of work that has to be done there. Just because they're getting a weekly email update doesn't mean they're the right person or even going to accept the job that they're qualified for. That's crazy.
Okay. Can I revisit the conversation real quick? So with what Amy is saying, there are really good recruiters in corporate America that are really good at closing candidates. I think something that they don't control oftentimes is they get so busy that sometimes they let the ball drop, and then that's when people from the outside, from third-party recruiting, start to say that corporate recruiters stink. It's because they've got 45 recs and they're trying to close multiple deals, sometimes they're not able to touch base with candidates and hiring managers as often as an external recruiter that's working to make sure he closes two or three deals that month. So I think oftentimes the leadership is responsible due to rec loads and you know, just a burdensome process. So, Amy, just to clarify with you, I think oftentimes internal gets a bad rap, and it's not the actual recruiters that can't do it. It's the situation they're in.
Okay, I want to say something, Jeremy. You're flip-flopping, okay? And it doesn't look good to flip-flop just
because
some
okay.
girl.
That's okay. You love flip-floppers, don't you?
No,
you're the new Steve Jobs, Jeremy. Congratulations.
Yeah, he
So that's not flip-flopping. That's not flip-flopping. You make general statements and
yeah.
apply them to the situation. That's not flip-flopping. Is to,
no,
to
Jeremy,
define the situation.
Here's what you here's what you're really saying and what you really believe, that Amy perhaps is the exception that proves the rule. That there's a you believe that there's a lot of recruiters in the corporate recruiting world who are slackers, and it's not the fault of their bosses like you're trying to backpedal and blame it on them now. It's that they say, okay, you know what, let this guy go. There's another 10 coming down the road. They want to work with my company. I don't have to stretch myself to stay in touch with these people and coddle them and entice them into the company. You don't believe they have the ability to do that because they don't have the motivation. Now you're saying
there are a lot of people. No, there are a lot of people like that. There are a lot of people like that.
I will agree with Jeremy
yeah.
that there are some. I will agree with Jeremy that there are some that are like that.
Okay. What
and that's unfortunate.
Mean?
But you know
what
I think it's the recruiter's
some?
Responsibility to say what?
What some? 10%?
Give it a percentage, Amy. How many do you think
yeah.
are like that?
Yeah.
Well, nobody that I work with personally.
Right.
I would okay, honestly, in corporate I would say a good maybe 20%.
That's all? Okay.
No, I think it's higher. I think it's a lot higher.
I don't know. I mean, I have, again, I don't, I work with mostly pretty good people and at my previous corporate gig as well. So, I mean, if I'm looking at just the people
I've encountered,
I have to say it's lower for me.
Look, everybody, you know what? I won't make these people fess up, but I'll tell you what the truth is. He believes that 80% of those recruiters are slackers, and she probably believes that 50% of them are. But neither of them want to badmouth everybody. Okay, I'll take the hit. They can deny it. I'm giving them plausible deniability, but you can judge from yourself what was just said. Okay? Now, I think Jeremy said something interesting that I was going to bring up later, but he kind of said now, when you close somebody, what he says it's not – I think he believes it's not a one-off time, like, okay, we're at the end of the process now, we're going into the boxing ring, and I'm going to fight you till you accept this position. He believes, and Jeremy, I want you to come in and correct me now if I'm wrong, or approve of what I say, that it's a constant kind of suggesting why the position is good, checking to see if they've got any secrets they're holding back or concerns or objections. Lots of ongoing communication. Am I right or wrong about that?
Absolutely. I would extend that to say you always want to close on the next step of the process, whatever that is, you know.
What does that mean? Can you tell us exactly, or should we wait till we walk through some of your past searches?
Well,
give us a clue.
So, you know, like on the first call, you want to get their buy-in that they're open to a conversation and that they're going to get you the resume. You know, once you get the resume, you're going to close them if you're the sourcer, you know, having an additional conversation with your recruiting partner. You know, and then on the next one, having an additional conversation with the hiring manager. You're not trying to get them to consider moving their family and making a big decision right now. You just want to move them forward in the process. So that's what I mean. You want to close them on the next step at all times.
That's
and uncover anything
okay.
that's going
to
be
that's not closing. That's just going through the hiring process. That's not closing. Closing is getting them to say, yeah, I want the job. Yes, I want the job. Come on. You know what? I have to admit, I'm going to confess something. I called this guy yesterday, and I had a conversation with him. It was a very good one. I said, don't choke on the show. Don't betray me. When I come and say everything you told me, don't say, no, I never said that. Okay?
No, I agreed with you.
Okay. Amy,
yes.
You're the opposition here, you know. I'm kind of a referee. Do you agree with him about that? And what he claims is that people like you don't have time to coax people through the
I think that, you know, it's the recruiter's. I tried to say this earlier, and you were yelling at me, but I think it's the recruiter's responsibility. If you find yourself running out of time to do that really, really important part of your job, then you better be having a conversation with your manager about either lightening your rec load or figuring out how to do it better. Because it's
yeah,
crap.
They're never
going to
lighten your rec load. I've been on social media for, like, in this recruiter sphere at least 9 years, and they've been complaining since I got in that they've got, you know, 30 or 40 recs. It's never going to change. HR's never going to get a seat at the table. Nothing ever changes, okay?
Okay. Sorry to hear that.
Okay. Now, I want to go through it later. That closing process, I got some really good information on it from Jeremy later. So people are interested
in
that.
Okay, well, I have 5 minutes. So can we talk about telling candidates that they're perfect for a job?
Okay, yeah, that's what you wanted. The value, I wanted to get that. It's social media for recruiting. That's the thing. Jeremy posted a link to an article, again, giving us good advice, and it said that if you're a social recruiter, if you're looking at people's stuff online, the stuff they put out on Twitter, that when you make an approach to them, you know that they're a right fit for the job, and you've got all the information you need to convince them that they're a right fit. Isn't that what the article said, Jeremy or Amy? Go ahead.
It said, because of this, they are the perfect, in bold, person you've been seeking out for this perfectly tailored, also bolded, opportunity for them.
And that you know that everything's perfect because you've been following them on Twitter. Is that right?
Perfect, because you read their LinkedIn profile from start to finish and you saw what they put on Twitter. So you know that they are perfect for this perfect opportunity. That makes me want to bleach my eyeballs. I can't unread that.
Why?
Because that's ridiculous. How do you say that you're perfect for this? You don't know if this person – okay, you know, I used to play with people that would call me and say stuff like that, and I would go on some rant about how I hated recruiting so much and I couldn't wait to get out of it, and could they please help me find a job as, like, a freaking circus clown or something.
Yeah.
Because this is so stupid. Don't assume that you know what's perfect for me.
Uh-huh.
That's the most arrogant, dumb thing that recruiters do, in my opinion, when they're cold calling candidates or warm emailing them or whatever we're calling it today.
Jeremy.
It's dumb. I don't like it.
Jeremy, you pointed us to that article on Twitter, but, like, what I do is I warn people, this is stupid. Don't listen to this part of the article. You don't do that. Why not?
I don't know. That's a good point. I personally, I'm not, I don't say things are perfect for people. I share articles that are interesting perspectives and start conversations. So that's a good point. Possibly I should point out when I disagree with something before I tweet it, but,
disagree. Do you agree with Amy? Do you agree with Amy or the author of the article, who's a past guest on the Recruiting Animal Show, by the way?
Well, I would never say something's perfect before I know someone better. I mean, I that turns me off in a call when I get that. I say, you know, typically, and I told you this yesterday, when I'm calling people, I say, you know, based on what I've seen about you, there's something that I think may be interesting. You know, I don't think you should act like you know everything on that first call. So,
okay, so you don't call up like lots of recruiters do. You don't call up and say, I've got a great job for you. You don't do that, right? Because you don't know it's a great job yet. Am I right about that, Jeremy?
Yes. Yes.
Amy?
No, you can know that it's a great job. It doesn't mean it's a great job for that person. So it could be, hey, I've got a great job. Somebody with your background could maybe be a great fit for it, but let's talk about what you would think is a great fit. And let
okay,
them
so you don't
start talking.
Say, I've got a great job for you.
Talk.
You don't say, Amy, you don't say, I've got a great job for you. Is that right?
No, I say, I've got a great job. Can we talk about it? What would be
you
a great
what?
Job in your opinion?
Isn't that,
see
what,
if
they
it
call, isn't that what they call kazooistry? You're really splitting hairs there.
I've never heard
okay.
that word before. I don't know.
Look it up. And go ahead now. You can
you
go hire
it?
A new CEO to replace Steve Ballmer. Go ahead. I know they need you badly. And we're going to move
on. You're sweet.
I'm
glad you think so.
Thank
highly
you very much
me.
For your contribution.
Okay, I'll see you later.
Does anyone else want to say anything before we move on? I'm opening all the people who are calling in late, so you don't have to call me names on Twitter, okay? Anybody else want to say something?
I agree with Jeremy. This is Kathy. I was a corporate recruiter for almost 6 years, and it got to the point where I was basically an admin. And now that I'm sourcing, I'm really doing the hard work. And, you know, I'm handing it over to a recruiter who's getting it pretty easy.
Okay. I agree with you as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, although I know lots of people don't. They don't want to say anything. Do you agree, Kathy, that sourcing is a, you know, also I got from Jeremy. I'm sorry. I went through his Twitter postings, and I actually this isn't even a Twitter posting. This is on the blog that he runs, SourceCon.com. It claims that sourcing is a criminal activity, okay?
No, I've been worried about that, and my husband has been warning me about that. And, Jeremy, what do you think about that? I mean, I'm just really concerned about things that I'm unintentionally finding when doing a simple bullion. And
yeah, no, I agree.
You know,
I
like
think
finding a person's email address, is that criminal?
If you read it carefully, I mean, I know people in our space that have automated all of this. You know, they've created apps that are automating it. So say you're looking, you're x-raying LinkedIn, and you're just kind of backing into where you want to be after, or you find an employer directory that you need a password to see, but it's not hidden behind a firewall, you know?
Right.
If you're doing it yourself, my interpretation recently, based on recent articles, is that that does not appear to be a criminal activity. Where it becomes criminal, it appears right now, based on recent rulings, is when you're building things that automate that process.
Okay, now,
so,
well, I want to try to understand something. Hold on. You said you x-ray LinkedIn. So first of all, I want you to explain for all the newbies, there's new people out there, what x-raying LinkedIn means. Very briefly. Secondly, I thought I heard you say that you're coming to a company directory, you know, something with a lot of names on it that is password protected, but that's not a problem for you as long as it's not behind a firewall. You can get into a password protected directory. I want to know how to do that, even if it is a criminal activity. Let them come and get me.
So,
I want those names.
Well,
tell
okay,
me how.
So,
I want to know, too.
I'm going to start on the directory, and then remind me, and we'll go back to the LinkedIn question. So say you're looking for there's an association that I used to recruit that profile of candidate. And so they had an association website that you could see as a non-member. Once you hack around on the site and you look at every website, you start to kind of see the way they structure the pages that you can only see once you enter a password. However, just because to get to that website on the internet, when you're browsing, you're not going to be able to just click through to those pages, but they're not technically hidden behind a firewall. So if I do a Boolean search with putting in the right structure of those URLs, I can see those URLs from Google, Bing, or any other search engine.
Does that make sense? I have actually done that. I've gone through. I remember there was some kind of municipal employees association for Toronto or Ontario or something like that. And I wanted to get through. It was password protected. And as I kept going through my Google search, I came on a page that took me right into the back end of that directory. How could I find that in a search without just coming upon it by accident?
Well, so the best way is, so typically when you have to get into something, it'll change it a little bit. So it will be like there will be a structure like my and then the website. You know, so once you're logged in, it switches the domain to my and then the domain. So they make you got to figure out the patterns, but then you search with a site search. So site, colon, and then the search. And then oftentimes you look for PDF files. So it's file type colon PDF, file type colon XLS, and you can start to see things they've uploaded that maybe they don't have a button for. So you couldn't click to it directly, but it's stored on that domain.
I am finding so much information off of Excel sheets, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, who go to, like what Jeremy was saying, go to a conference, go to a meeting, they have to do a sign-in sheet. You know, so you're finding everybody's email, their phone number, everything. So is that illegal?
That, to me, right now, it does not appear that that is illegal as long as you're not automating searches. So say you build an app or you build a program that is constantly scraping websites and kind of changing URLs to try to find those things, then you're not breaking the law.
If
I know some people that...
If you're constructing a Boolean, you are constructing an app that's scraping. You know what
but
I'm saying?
But it's not automated.
Okay.
You're doing it yourself.
Okay.
It's not automated.
Okay. Let me break this up for a minute. You know what? I don't care if it's illegal or not. What I want, this is the perfect opportunity for Jeremy to do an advertisement for his October conference. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much.
If you want to learn this stuff, go ahead.
Yep, thank you very much. So first of all, we don't give legal advice. We're talking about a post that an attorney wrote on SourceCon.com. And so I'm not an attorney. I'm just kind of trying to interpret it like most other sourcers are. And
just
and
hold on one
so
second. Will Thompson.
Read the post.
Will Thompson. I'm sorry, Will Thompson. Will Thompson says, great guy, nice guy. He says that the connection is so bad that he has to end the show. I can hear this guest much better than I can hear most.
Will Thompson is way off base. The audio quality of this show is one of the best we've seen in months.
Agree,
you animal.
The funny thing is, Will Thompson is in Texas, just like the guest. Although Will is in Austin, and the guest is in Dallas, as far as I know. Sorry, Will. I hope the recording comes out well. Anyway, Jeremy, back to the SourceCon. You didn't say what conference you're advertising.
Yeah.
SourceCon, tell us the date. When's the date? Then I'll let you do the exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's October 2nd and 3rd.
Where is it?
I wish I could go. I want to go.
It's at Microsoft in Seattle, or outside of Seattle.
Uh-huh. Okay. And how do people apply? Where's the site? Just go to source.com.com. Where do they go?
Yeah, go to SourceCon.com, and in the top menu bar, you'll see a menu option for SourceCon Fall 2013. So just click there, and it'll take you to the site to register.
Okay, if you see this redheaded woman with a dog in her arms coming after you on the Microsoft campus, that's Amy. Watch out, okay? Now, tell us, why would people want to come to SourceCon? Can they get tricks like the ones you're kind of telling us about now without really explaining anything? Will they get the goods? Will they go home with, hey, I know how to break the law to my benefit kind of thing? I know how to crack the code.
Well, you know, we've got 2 days that all we talk about is sourcing. So they will definitely get a lot of takeaways and tips and tricks for sourcing. So we've got a tactical track, which is for individual practitioners. And then we have a leadership track that is for people that lead sourcing teams or recruiting teams to learn how to kind of integrate sourcing into their teams more. And then we've got a lab track that is basically lab sessions that are very tactical, focused on specific tools. So three different options during the afternoons to dive into all these things. So
okay, and if someone wants to go but their boss won't pay, can they have them call you, or will you call the boss and do a sell job on that person for them?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
No, I can give all kinds of great reasons and answer questions for any leadership that wants to know more about it. I'll definitely have those conversations.
And on Twitter, you're I'm Jeremy without the apostrophe.
I'm
Jeremy.
Right. I'm Jeremy R. You left off the R.
I'm Jeremy R. Okay. Sorry. I'm Jeremy R. Why, somebody else have I'm Jeremy? You had to add the R?
I don't know.
Well, you take out the R.
Check,
I mean, it's
I
bad
think.
Enough as it is. It's
bad
it's enough.
It's been a while.
Okay, speaking of
That's
cool
awful.
Tools, you yeah, he's right. I agree with Jerry on something. That is awful, okay? I'm Jeremy R. Okay, so look, talked about cool tools. Do you want to share any cool tools with us here? Something you can really explain that people can take away?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot. I guess the biggest thing right now that we're seeing are all of the aggregators. So if you want to look at some of the aggregators that are out there, there's, you know, Guild, Intello, Hiring Solve, TalentBin. So the aggregator
I said, give us a cool tool. Don't just mumble a bunch of words that people can't hear. Give us a cool tool. If you were listening to the show, what would you be excited to hear about? One thing.
One thing, I think I'm going to go for free tools. Look at Cloud Kite.
What is it?
Cloud Kite.
spell it, please?
C-L-O-U-D, and then K-I-T-E. That's a cool new tool that I found recently. And what it does is it searches public files that are saved on Google Drive, Dropbox, Evernote, and Box.
And
so
it's
a search engine, basically, that will find anything that people have saved in those places. So it's like, you know, meeting minutes from, you know, associations. People upload their resumes and they save them in different tools.
Okay. And do they have to make them public for you to be able to search them?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Any questions for Jeremy before I move
do.
On?
I'm sorry. I don't want to take up a lot of time. But, Jeremy,
yeah, well,
I've been
make
really...
sure. Go ahead.
I've been really struggling on finding people's email addresses. Now, I can find their corporate email addresses pretty easily. But do you have any good suggestions for that?
You know what? There is something, and I hate to say it, it's not on our blog, but if you look at Irina Shemeva, she uploaded a really good tutorial on how to find anyone's email address. I think it was about 2 weeks ago on Boolean strings. So I love that one. Really, the best way aside from doing it that way is you can test emails. So obviously you can try first initial last name, first name dot last name, and then the domain for the company. And you can actually search for those inside LinkedIn. You know,
but she wants their personal email addresses. She wants their personal email addresses.
Right.
So where I typically find those is by writing Boolean strings, you know, email me in quotes.
That's what I try.
You know, and then finding their home communities where they live. And then, you know, you can look up people on Central Appraisal District, you know, to see where they own their home. And then you can search for that county or that small town. And oftentimes you can find people's email addresses on, like, soccer carpool newsletters, weird things, you know. So that, when you're looking for personal email addresses, that's the, I like to find out what, because if you look at Dallas is huge. People own homes all over the Metroplex. So you search for their name in the Central Appraisal District to find out what county and city they live in, and then you start diving deeper into that community is where you're going to find personal email addresses.
Okay. Annabelle, there is a cool tool for you to use. If you go on to Jigsaw or data.com, and you pull up a company name, and you pull up all of the contacts in that company, and then go to the graveyard of people who have left the company, many times you can find the company's email address there and phone numbers.
Did you guys just see Amy Beth Hale just made a great point? If you look up who is searches, you can look at who owns domains for personal domains, and that will oftentimes have their personal email address.
Beth isn't calling in and challenging Jeremy for something that I wouldn't be able to challenge him on? How come she isn't helping me, okay? He's not your boss. You don't work for him. You can challenge him. I don't want to say make a fool of him. You can challenge him. Make him, you know, struggle to answer to stretch. You're doing him a favor to show him how good everybody, how good he is, okay? I'm asking him, I'm lobbing him all kinds of questions. Now, here's something that somebody said, Jeremy. I want to see what you think about it. If you have a typical MRI recruiting office structure, you would be stupid not to have someone specializing in internet sourcing. And where I read that, the guy said that whenever he talks to a third-party recruiter, they all disqualify sourcing. They said they can hire someone for $10 an hour in India or Thailand or someone to do all their sourcing. But this guy said that's not a good idea. You're getting inferior work from those people. If you want to hire a good person, you got to pay like $80,000 a year, and it's worthwhile. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with that. Basically, you know, in a third-party setting, I'm not going to disagree that, you know, if you're a third-party, you work from home, you make a really good living off one or two placements a month, and you do it all networking, and you're on the phone, and you really know your market, then yeah, you probably don't need to hire someone and spend a lot of money for internet research because you're so dialed into your specialty. But I think if you're growing an organization and you've got one person that's an account manager with multiple kind of project managers, they should have at least one of those people that's really good at internet search. Typically, they're training on phone sourcing, which I think is critical, and they're really dialed into their networks. But I think one person that can help them unearth, you know, directories and personal email addresses and just be a little bit more innovative is critical if you're building out a team of three or four people.
Anybody want to challenge him on that? No. You know what? If I don't challenge you, or I don't haul Amy in here to challenge you, nobody.
Does anybody want to agree with him?
Jerry,
yes, I will agree with him.
Do you have somebody like that, a dedicated sourcer you're paying $80,000 a year to?
Yep.
You do?
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into salary. I believe that's proprietary.
Okay.
But, yeah, I have – as you build out your small third-party agency – you know,
yeah.
Sourcing is a key part of that, and you have to build with each person having a strength in a particular area. You don't need three internet sourcers. You would need an internet sourcer, more of your traditional phone sourcing person, and somebody that, you know, maybe the same way that I have, somebody that's got a huge database that sources, you know, via email and those kind of things. So you want to cover your bases.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's news from Jerry. I thought I knew everything about this guy. Okay. There's only
you know nothing
minutes.
About me.
I guess I don't. Now, it's funny. You know what? Jerry and I had a chat yesterday. Both of us remember all the details from a lot of searches that we've done in the past, especially the searches where something weird happened, okay? But when I ask a recruiter who's a guest on the show, they can't remember anything. And Jeremy is one of them. He seems to have amnesia, except for one search. We went through it in detail. And I'd like to walk through that search that you told me about yesterday. Is that all right, Jeremy?
Okay. That's
okay.
Fine. Yeah.
So it was for, let's say, it doesn't really matter what it was, the formal title was. I've made a note, Director of Financial Reporting. Is that good enough?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and they were looking for somebody who had a lot of knowledge about a specific industry and a lot of knowledge about a specific financial reporting law. Am I right so far?
Correct.
Okay, so let's start with the sourcing. How did you identify the candidates?
Well, you know, this was someone, they were looking for someone from, you know, third-party, you know, investment banking analyst type that really knew their niche industry. So, excuse me, I started reviewing financial reports about the industry to kind of backtrack who was researching and writing about the topic.
From a trade journal? Where did you find those reports?
Well, from people that were, you know, writing things that were on the internet about, you know, publicly traded firms. You know, so if they were writing, you know, whoever had the byline in an article about, you know, a financial report that was released to Wall Street. So I started looking at the names who had bylines for those topics. And then I started searching for those names and to see who else was listed with them on different articles. So I built a short list of people that wrote about that type of industry. And then from there, I guess this is where I think a lot of sourcing today kind of leaves it. They forget, you know, sourcing is great. You've got to generate names, but then you have to get on the phone as quickly as possible. So, you know, from there, I built that list of names, and then I started just dialing in and talking to people and getting more names from those. So basically they were looking for someone that had been covering their industry for 5 to 7 years that was ready to come inside the industry and work as a director of financial reporting, reporting to the CFO.
Okay, so how did you make your approach to people? I just want people to tell your cold call to a candidate. And I have it written out in front of me. If you can't do it, I'll do it for you, but go ahead.
So, you know, basically my call is typically, hi, you know, I came across your profile online, and it looks like you might be a fit for something I'm working on. I'd love to run it by you. Basically, it's a director of financial reporting in this industry, and, you know, it appears that you've got a lot of exposure there. Who do you know that I should be talking with about this? Who meets these criteria?
And, you know, typically the people I was calling met that criteria and they would kind of self-disclose, you know, hey, you know, that sounds a lot like me. Well, tell me, would you be receptive to a new opportunity for the right situation and then move into the presentation?
Okay, if they say, no, I'm not receptive, what do you do?
What would motivate you to consider a change?
Oh, really? And have you ever turned anybody around like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah? Okay. Now, I would love to hear that story, but you didn't offer it, so we'll move on for the time being. Okay? Okay. So the name of the company, when do you tell the name of the company that you're recruiting on?
That's, you know, it depends on if you're on a retainer, if it's contingent, if you're exclusive.
Let's say it's contingency search. You're not the only recruiter necessarily working on that.
If it were a contingency search, I would hold it as long as I could without losing credibility with the candidate.
Okay. Now, yesterday,
ideally, I would want to have their resume in hand so I could present it before I shared the client if it's contingent.
Okay. So if they say, Jeremy, what company is it? Can you tell me who your client is? What do you say?
If they come at me directly like that and they're a good fit for the role, I would tell them who it was. And depending on the client relationship, you know, I would probably let the client know, hey, I don't have a resume yet, but came across a great candidate. Here's his LinkedIn profile and his name.
Okay.
Just to kind of.
You wouldn't say, you know what, I'd feel more comfortable having giving you that information once you send me a resume to show you're a potential candidate?
I probably would. Every call is different. But, yeah, I would. I've done that.
Okay, you know what? Every call is different, but they're not that different, okay? There's probably about three different options for every call. There's not that many, okay? Now, you said something really interesting to me. We're running out of time, but it's a danger when the search works too well. And that happened to you on this search. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, you know, this particular search, I came across the right person really quickly because it was a really small pool of people that actually fit the criteria. I came across the person really quickly, and she was interested. And so the danger that created was that the client had not seen any other candidates from me. So here I was with the perfect candidate as the first presentation, you know, which typically I don't like to send the best candidate absolutely first and alone, which has created a dilemma for me.
Okay, well, how do you handle it? Oh, come on, don't leave me there.
Yeah, so in this situation, I did not have other candidates like her. So I had built a good credibility with the CFO. He was a really, you know, black and white guy and just wanted the facts. And so I called him and I was like, hey, you know what? I want to prep you for this. I know you probably thought this was going to take a while. And in our kickoff, I prepared you to be looking for 4 to 6 weeks at least as we identified the right candidate. You know, I came across this person that I think is the right candidate really, really quickly. And I want to make sure that you're ready to move forward if you think this is the right person that can do the job. And so I had to prep both sides that it could move quickly because they seemed like such a great match. So
that could be a huge problem. You could present the best person in the market and they say, oh, I want to see more people before I make an offer. In the meantime, once you've shaken that first person loose, somebody else could recruit them, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I got lucky on this one. I mean, it was a situation. He luckily recognized the background, and it was a good situation because he had a similar background. So it kind of inflated her even more, made her look even better because it was the same track he took to becoming a CFO. So
okay,
it worked out in this situation.
I think you told me yesterday that you had to inform him, your client, about how passive this person really was, that he was, like, very lucky that you're bringing her in because she was very loyal to her own company and really wasn't looking for a position. And he should be thankful,
right,
in other words, and take the opportunity very seriously. Okay, now here's the thing. We've got almost no time left, but we were talking about before, about managing the client. You told me it's very important to have a lot of small conversations. What is to build rapport? What does that mean exactly?
you know, small conversations, you in order to build rapport is just, and it's really both sides of the deal, is, you know, throughout the process, just making sure that you're staying in touch with both parties. And, you know, hey, you know what? You didn't make this criteria, but I know you're looking for this. And actually, it came up yesterday that she's done this. Isn't that cool? You know, so just little things like that throughout the process to keep both people excited
forward. You're not interviewing the person every day, so how are you unearthing new information on an ongoing basis? I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, you interview her. I spend an hour maybe for a really serious candidate going through the resume, talking about what she wants. You make the presentation. What are you going to call? Do you take out some of the information so every 3 days or 2 days you can call back with a tidbit? I don't know what you're talking about.
So, you know, you have new conversations all the time. You don't let – I mean, if the interview is scheduled 2 weeks out, you come up with a reason to touch base with everybody. You don't let it go 2 weeks. I mean, you don't call them every day.
Give me an example.
Well, for example, you know, hey – you know, leave the rental car hanging. You know, it's 2 weeks out. Don't line up the rental car. Call them back a week from now and say, hey, forgot to tell you, we've got your rental car lined up. Just little details. Just make sure that you have something to touch base with them about. Don't leave it, you know, 2 weeks from now, you're going to have an interview. That's great. You know, here's the itinerary. You want to be developing this throughout the whole process. So you have reasons to connect with them.
Animal, are you seriously saying that you don't know that? You don't know how to come up with ways to stay in touch?
I'm dead serious about how – I don't know how to keep – I do try to be very thorough. I try to be very thorough up front. I try to be very – you don't have to thank him. He's always ready to take a shot at me.
I'm just slapped in the face with how much you don't know about our profession. It's like a cold shower every Wednesday at noon.
Yeah.
Tune in
for
this week's reminder of why Animal still hasn't made a placement in 9 years. I mean, that's what this show was turned into for me.
Look, Jerry, I do a thorough job up front. I spend a lot of time sending good notes.
Yeah,
I don't call my
matter of fact,
back every
make
other
sure,
day to ask
make me. Sure that you don't have any reason to call your candidate for 2 weeks.
Just
be so
sure
thorough that you've
play.
Got no reason to catch up just to see what's
Give
going on.
Give me an example of what – okay, here's a guy who doesn't make all the arrangements. He staggers them out, so he's got an excuse to call back. What do you do, Jerry? Give me an example before the show's over.
Here's an example. Hey, how's it going? It's been – we haven't talked since last week. I'm giving you a call to see – make sure everything's still on track. What's new? What's changed? How's it going? It's me, Jerry. How are you? I mean, what the hell? I don't play games with it.
That's
I let them know. I'll be in touch several times between now that we've officially confirmed this for two. First of all, I don't schedule stuff for 2 weeks out, though. That's a whole different story. But if that is the case, I'm going to say, hey, it's a long time between now and then, so I'm going to call you a couple times and see what's going on. I am going to be in touch with you.
Okay. That is different. Okay. Anyway,
no,
Jeremy, what do you think about Jerry's approach before we finish the show? What do you think, Jeremy?
I think Jerry's doing it. I think his approach is perfect. I don't see any issues with that. I think one of the things that Jerry has on his side that the internal corporate recruiting world fights with a lot is oftentimes we're not doing it on our own terms just because of the nature of the relationship. You know, he's able to have more client control. So, you know, like the scheduling it 2 weeks out and you know, at a big company where you're not in control. I have to tell you,
a third party doesn't always have the control of when their client's going to see the candidate, and they can really get screwed up like that too. I've had it happen. I don't want to tell this story now because you know why? I want to give you the last word before the show's over.
And because
you
don't have a story.
I have a real
sure
good story,
you do.
But I want to give the last word to my guest.
Yeah.
Jeremy, do you have any parting words for my audience?
No, I appreciate you letting me come on. It's been fun. I you know, hope to see as many of you as I can at SourceCon. I mean, SourceCon really started as a conference for researchers and sourcers. I think it's grown. We're right now we have more people
that have pre-registered for SourceCon than we've ever had attend a previous event, and we're 5 weeks out. So it's going to be really good. Actually, we're 4 weeks out now. It's going to be really good. It's going to be the biggest one we've had. And, you know, if you source as a part of your job, whether you're with an agency, in-house recruiting, whatever, if you source, meaning if you're a recruiter or a sourcer that does sourcing at all, it's an event that you could walk away with good takeaways. So thanks for giving me a couple
before
minutes.
Before you and I check out, Jeremy, I just want to tell Jerry there's about a dozen people on the line. Don't lose them. When we go to – what are we going to do? The recruiting after – Jeremy!
Oh,
Roberts,
help me, baby.
Say that again.
Yeah, I've got to apologize. I missed half the show. I went to
You're watching war videos?
No, I went to the cafeteria and cooked a lean cuisine.
Hey, Jerry.
Who's this?
Hey, it's Blake.
Hey, do not say anything about you-know-what here. Give me some code signals. Code signals.
I was going to tell you I had to take a break from the chaos and listen to the other chaos.
Oh.
But I got to run. I got a conference call I got to hop on. But hey,
do you have an update for me regarding you-know-what? Come on!
I'll call you later. It's pretty cool stuff. But, we'll probably get around something new Monday.
Is he getting you a new milk crate, Jerry?
That's funny, man. I haven't heard the milk crate joke. Dude,
hey, Stringer, that just flat out shut me down, buddy. You win.
Remember that? Golly, that's old school right there.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, Mike.
That was old school. That's why I brought it up with Blake on the phone.
Yeah.
Man.
All right, man. So Blake, what are your scores then?
I think Jeremy's great. I've always liked Jeremy.
He's a good dude. He knows what he's talking about versus some of these other guests.
95 for him, 75 for Animal, just because he made Animal look, like, very silly, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Animal can't even come up with a reason to call a candidate between setting the interview and 2 weeks later when it happens. Because he doesn't want to be seen as having not so thoroughly covered everything the first time.
I think the problem is he just doesn't want to be seen as a recruiter.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Mike, what did you think of the show? All right, hey, Blake, call me. I need these updates, man.
I know. I'll call you later. Bye.
All right, bye.
So I was busy setting up reference checks between the CEO and a client and references for a VP of sales that were to make an offer to. So I paid very little attention to the show. But what I did hear sounded good. So I'll give an 85 for the guest and a 95 for Animal for booking a good guest for a change.
I got to give him some credit. This was a legitimate guest. Yeah. Very nice. Cool. Can I apologize publicly for some of the scraps that we've had? Mike.
I love you too, Jerry.
I'm sorry, man. Sometimes I just get so fed up with my crappy little existence here out in the farm field. And you guys in the big city, I mean, you get to drive all over the place in real nice cars and stuff.
Yeah, we do yoga, too.
Wow. So I guess I snapped out of more or less jealousy that's been building over the years, Mike. I'm sorry.
You know what I enjoy about our scraps the most? You know what I enjoy about our scraps the most, Jerry, is that people don't realize that we have like a 15-year history of this.
Yeah.
So people that don't know it, I like watching their reaction.
That's like people that don't know that Animal's not actually a recruiter.
Yeah.
It's like his whole thing is like, whoa.
He's not a radio host either, so I don't know what the hell he is.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for calling in. Who's the next caller with a score? There are 12 people here. Speak up.
Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, I love Jeremy. I think he's great. And I think Animal did a great job getting him on, and I wish he had more time. So I'm going to give Jeremy a 98 and
wow.
Animal a 95.
That's a very, very high score. I believe that there's some behind the scenes something going on, and it's none of my business.
No, there isn't.
It's not, it's none of my business. It's none of my business, Kathy. That's what I'm saying. But I suspect something.
No.
I don't know.
Hey, Kathy, I'm enjoying watching seeing your pictures on Facebook, by the way.
Which ones?
Of your morning surfing.
Oh, yeah. Can you believe I actually got up and surfed? I couldn't believe it.
I didn't notice any of that. I just like seeing pictures of you in a bathing suit.
Oh.
All righty.
Okay.
Any other caller that wants to talk about the show? Somebody? Where's Alan? Who's that? Are we on Kathy's speakerphone?
Nope.
Well, here's my score. I thought the guy was really good, but I'm not. Anything in the 90s is pure genius. So I don't know where you guys are coming from with that. I'll give him an 82. And then Animal, he needs an 85 for actually getting somebody that – I learned some stuff on the show today, which is rare. Very rare.
And it was a spammer show, and every show has been a spammer show, so.
Yeah.
We didn't need somebody else to come on and teach us how to send 10 million emails to sit for each job we work
on. Is Nahez on here? Nahez, did you call in?
Yep, I'm here.
See? There you go, yeah. Mike.
I'm gonna top it off at 80 for the guest and a 70 for Animal. And the reason is I had to listen to this while sitting in the DMV for the last hour, which is a place I absolutely detest. So I just had to sit there and listen. And if you go back and listen to the sound, once again, Animal is burning up, you know, the first 25 minutes, which I think is precious, especially for the guest. The first 25 minutes, first of all, you know, once again, there were telephone issues.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a 4, 5, 6 minute waste of time. And then followed up with, you know, the guest wasn't aware about the song and it was another 2, 3, 4. I mean, the show's an hour, you know, and I actually logged in because my office, we've got 4 recruiters that are hitting the phones, but we don't have an official sourcer per se. We do all the sourcing ourselves. And I was, you know, eager to hear, you know, how that would be an additive thing to a
this guy's a good sourcer.
Oh yeah! Absolutely. He definitely was very credible. As a guest, he was very, very credible, and I really liked that. My ears perked up when he was. They were asking for some specific tools because I would have loved to have heard some more.
What are you doing at the DMV though?
I had to get my license renewed. Good God!
Who's doing dishes?
I look at.
Hold on. Who's doing that?
Sorry, I was putting ice in my cup. I didn't realize you could hear.
You don't just drink it straight out of the bottle?
I drink water all day, Jerry. I'm healthy.
You know, we live in such an incredible bubble. We at our desks, and then when we're forced to go into the outside world, it is like Mad Max out there.
The
people I was surrounded by, I get a better and better understanding of why the country's the way it is, man.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, that's why I was there. And anyway, the show was very good, and I do think honestly, it's been like 4 or 5 shows in a row where the first 25 minutes. It's just a melee of garbage. It's just,
all right,
you know.
We'll work on it. Will work on it.
I'm eager to find out how to attract people to become recruiters.
You
want to
teach them to be a recruiter? Or do you want to hire a recruiter?
I'd really like to just find people, you know, someone that's done it maybe and just wants a better deal. You know, just wants to have more freedom, make more money, they can use my tools. I'm really struggling with this.
You got to pay them at least some kind of a draw or base, man. Nobody's going to come to get paid half commission as a non-employee person. It's just not going to happen.
Well, we'll take that.
I saw my last recruiter? He was a fresh college grad. He just graduated. I met him at Starbucks and parked my Mercedes right out front and said, "Do you want to drive one of those?" And said, "Do you want to drive one of those?" And he signed right up.
Did you show him your watch?
As a matter of fact, I believe I was wearing my Rolex at the time.
Nice.
Dang, A-Stringer, I'm going to have to go upgrade my car. That's probably part of my problem. The 99 Ford Ranger just isn't cutting it.
But seriously, Nahas, if you really are looking at adding to your team, my personal opinion, you have to have some stake in the game. Nobody that can actually make placements is going to hop on with you just to give you half with no nut from your side. Speaking like as a squirrel nut deal. Okay, that's a farm phrase. You have to invest in somebody.
Right, but the problem is, Jerry, depending on where in the country you are, I mean, there are recruiters working for consulting firms in North Jersey, or in New Jersey, I should say, that are making six-figure bases. You know what? I can't justify paying a recruiter working a desk a six-figure base. My last two hires, one was a fresh college grad, and the other had been in a sales role, an inside sales role for 2 years. I mean, I'm to the point of training people because I just can't justify a six-figure base.
Right. Well, but you have some kind of a base, don't you, Mike?
Yeah, I do.
And the other thing, Jerry, you do a lot of contract employment too, you know, which is a whole different type of math, right? You know, so
some of my recruiters pretty much work in the direct permanent placement field.
Didn't know that. Well, I'm sorry to hijack the after show.
Yeah, no problem. But I mean, it is an interesting topic.
Well, and I'm scheduled to be on supposedly the 17th, but I'm struggling with I'm really, really struggling with a good topic, you know, to be honest with you. I'm really struggling. So
that's Animal's responsibility.
Yeah, I know. And it'd be nice to actually, you know, talk to him about it. But maybe we'll connect.
You know, Jerry, I would like to suggest a topic if anyone else finds it as interesting as I do. I've been thinking about.
Yep.
Is being a sourcer the entry-level job to being a recruiter? Or sourcer a career like Kathy? You know, I have these two new people that I'm sort of teaching them to be sourcers. I don't have them on the phone doing interviews. I don't have them doing client development. I just have them purely doing sourcing. So,
well, I think
and my career path for them is to lead to be a full recruiter. You know what I mean?
I think that it depends on your organization, but in the groups that I've been with, this is Nick Palmer, the groups that I've seen and been with, hello, it's both. It can be a career path, or it can be the door that opens up into more direct client and candidate interaction. It really depends on the individual skill set and where their skills and desires lie.
Because sourcing might not necessarily be a people person role. A lot of it is just you and your computer machine, detective work, no engagement really at all.
That's not true. Most clients want you to engage with the list that you've identified and get them interested candidates.
Well, then that's recruiting.
But I think we're talking about two different types of sourcing, though, Kathy. Like, the kind of sourcing you do is different than somebody working in an agency being a sourcer feeding candidates to the recruiters working there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but don't you want those candidates to be qualified and interested? So I'm a sourcer, but I have to get them qualified candidates.
Well, like my guy who's here right now, right? I'm working on an SAP role. He's rolling up candidates that he's finding into a spreadsheet, and I'm reaching out to them.
Okay.
But there is a fine line there where you're talking about how do you meet that minimum qualification? How do you make sure that they meet that minimum qualification? And in some cases, it's very evident. And in other cases, you do have to make that call or contact. And
totally agree.
So that I think it depends on how you're going to determine that. And it's going to be different on a candidate-by-candidate basis.
Yeah, and if your sourcer is an entry-level person, you want to be the one making the connection rather than them anyway.
Yeah, but I feel this internal need to keep pushing him to the next level. Like, for example, I'm starting to get him on some phone screens with me this week just listening. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I keep feeling the need to push him to the next level, but I don't know if that's right. I mean, maybe there's a career path just for a sourcer, working internally in an agency. You know what I mean?
Good topic.
That is a good topic.
Well, thank
then
you.
Maybe that should fill in for the 17th, because I'm telling you, I'm really struggling.
All right.
So, Jerry, I have scores.
Great.
My scores are animal at a 78. Good quality, but problems with some of the tech and issues. Up. And for the guest, I'm going to go with 84. Good topics. I was actually engaged several points in time and did learn a few things.
All right. Yeah, I thought it was a good show. I really did. All right, everybody. It's a crazy day for me, so you're free to keep on chit-chatting. Anybody else have a score that they did not let me know about? Anybody want to chime in with thoughts on the show today? Anybody?
Jerry, is your Facebook group still alive?
Still alive? Man, it is rolling. The membership has doubled in just the past 10 days.
Excellent.
So what, you have 6 now?
61, I believe. Yeah. Join it. Take it easy, everybody.
Actually, go on Facebook. All right, take it care. Bye-bye.
Yep, enjoy.
Yeah, you know what, my wife...